From the heartland of America and the gateway to the West, good morning, good evening, wherever you may be, across the nation, around the world, I'm George Norrie. Welcome to Coast AM, and next hour, Ghost Hunters with John Kachuba. Get ready for that one. It's been a while since we went hunting. Well, here's some of the news of the day. Contrary to rumors surrounding the Air Combat Command's stand down of all 100,000 active duty airmen here in the country for Friday, the U.S. will not be devoid of fighter aircraft to protect the nation. This is a big story. We'll be talking with Jerry Corsi about it in just a moment. The Russian Air Force has tested a giant fuel air bomb, which the military says is the biggest non-nuclear explosive device in the world. Russian television showed a bomber dropping the bomb over a test range, a very powerful explosion in a four-story building reduced to rubble. Claims that it's bigger than the MOAB, a U.S. device of similar destructive power, seem plausible. According to analysts, such bombs are mainly designed to destroy underground targets. Fuel air bombs, technically known as thermobaric devices, generally detonate in two stages. A small blast creates a cloud of explosive material, which is then ignited with devastating effect. Mark Farmer is a writer, photojournalist, military affairs consultant, as well as a retired U.S. Coast Guardsman. He's been on Coast to Coast and will offer some of his input into this story. Hello, Mark. Welcome back.
Thank you very much. It's a pleasure to be here.
My pleasure. Tell us a little bit about Russia. Why did they go ahead and build one of these, just to keep pace with us?
Well, you know, if you look through, and I put a selection of links on my website for people to go to find out more information about this. You know, we've been using these kind of weapons for quite a while, but it's certainly a matter of one upsmanship, and I believe part of a concerted message that Putin and the oligarchs and everybody in power who are sending to the West, and particularly the United States.
Have we used the MOAB at all anywhere?
No, we've only used it in test drops. It's, as far as anybody can tell, it's never been used in combat. But if you look at the Russian device, it's very big, but it's quite fragile, and it's only going to be used for mid-air and maybe surface contact bursts. The MOAB, our bomb, is GPS-guided, so you can put it exactly where you want it. So the military utility of both bombs is probably about the same, but the psychological and propaganda value of the Papa Bomba, as I'm calling it, the dad of all bombs, which Russia just did, it's more a matter of credibility and wanting to be taken seriously.
Now, you know, we just had the story that it took out a four-story building. How much damage can a bomb like this do, Mark?
You figure a blast diameter of somewhere around 2,000 feet. So that line between small tactical nuclear devices and maybe small bunker busters that are nuclear and these new, very large bombs, of which we're building a new one at 30,000 pounds that can hopefully penetrate 200 feet of concrete, is that line's going to blur. It's going to be very hard to tell, other than spewing radioactivity all over somewhere, of what kind of weapon did what damage.
Okay, Mark, thanks for the update on that story. Mark Farmer's website linked up at coasttocoastam.com. Audio portions of Khalid Sheikh Mohammed's testimony from his combatant status review tribunal were released by the Pentagon. The audio clips contain admissions by the suspected mastermind of the 9/11 attacks that he plotted to kill President Clinton and Pope John Paul II. In Nevada, after finding a half a dozen old airplane wrecks over 10 days, crews searching for missing aviator Stephen Fawcett focused on new tips about planes flying in the area the day he disappeared. A Black Hawk helicopter and several ground crews were dispatched to a spot in the Pine Nut Mountains in western Nevada, where two witnesses reported seeing a plane like Fawcett's fly into a canyon, but not fly out on Labor Day. And search planes had flown the area several times, but the second sighting was reported to authorities on Wednesday, so the ground crews went in for a closer look. To the south, just across the California line and very close to where Ed Dames thinks Stephen Fawcett has gone down with his remote viewing team, search planes flew over an area northeast of Yosemite National Park after a woman reported that she had camped there over Labor Day. And get this, heard a noise that sounded like an airplane, followed by what sounded like an explosion. So they're going to go investigate that as well. Indonesia was shaken by a series of powerful earthquakes in less than 24 hours Thursday, a day after survivors watched in horror as the ocean retreated, then raced back to shore as a 10-foot high tsunami hit. Hundreds of houses were destroyed in Wednesday's quake that sent panicked residents fleeing to the hills. At least 10 people were killed. The most powerful quake was registered a magnitude of 7.8 on Thursday off of Sumatra, according to the U.S. Geological Survey. Aaron Meltzner is an earthquake geologist working in the field of neotectonics, and he received his Bachelor of Science from California's Institute of Technology. Aaron, the situation in this area, is it that unstable lately?
It's very unstable for the last 48 hours, and actually the largest earthquake registered a magnitude 8.4, and it was followed about 13 hours later by a 7.9, and a few hours after that by a 7.0. From a geological perspective, over hundreds of years, this is certainly very precedented. We know earthquakes of this size and larger have occurred in the past, but this is not an everyday happening.
And the big one hit on Wednesday, right? Followed by these other ones on Thursday?
Yes, all within 24 hours.
What is going on in that region, Aaron, that really is causing all these earthquakes?
Well, the research that my colleagues and I have been doing for the last 15 years, and I've only been involved in the last few years, shows that this plate boundary has magnitude, each location along the entire plate boundary, which is several thousand miles long, has an earthquake about once every few hundred years that's in the magnitude 8 to 9 range. And in the historic period, we were first introduced to this on December 26, 2004, when a section much farther north ruptured in a magnitude 9.1 earthquake, unleashing the tsunami that we all know about. And 3 months later, the next patch to the south of that ruptured in an 8.7 earthquake, which had it not been for the magnitude 9.1 3 months earlier, the 8.7 would have been the largest earthquake anywhere in the world in the past 40 years. And now we're seeing that something that we anticipated for since early on in our research, this is an event that we anticipated would happen, that this patch of the fault has an earthquake about, the patch of the fault that's been rupturing in the last few days has an earthquake about once every 200 years, and it's been about 200 years since the last earthquake.
And I assume we're not done there, Aaron, are we?
Probably not. What's actually alarming to scientists is the fact that there's one patch in particular that we know last ruptured in two earthquakes in 1797 and 1833, and so far it has not gone. But the three earthquakes, the 8.4, the 7.9, and then the 7.0, have basically encircled this patch, and each of those earthquakes added stress to this patch that has not gone since 1833. And while we really can't predict whether it'll happen tomorrow or 10 or 20 or 30 years from now, we are concerned that it's much more likely to go soon than I would have told you 48 hours ago. And the million-dollar question is it over for now, or are we going to wake up tomorrow to news that there's been a repeat of the 2004 tsunami?
Well, let's hope not, Aaron. What about trouble spots here in the United States? Do you see anything there?
Earthquakes are inherently unpredictable. This is, no one I think would make a prediction in Indonesia. But this is rare that we get swarms of this nature to shed any light on what might happen in the future. We know that areas like Los Angeles are in over hundreds and thousands of years. Sustained far greater earthquakes than anyone has seen who's living today. Certainly, probably nothing that's happened in the last 1,000 years portrays what is possible in the Los Angeles Basin. And the LA Basin is actually in a long-term, 1,000-year-long lull right now. The million-dollar question for the LA Basin is, are we going to start to emerge out of it in the next few years or decades or even in our lifetimes, or are we good for the next 100 years? And so far, we can't say.
I have a sneaky suspicion, Aaron, we're going to be talking to you again and very soon.
All right. Well, for everyone's sake, I hope it's not in the next few days.
All right. That's Aaron Musler. He is an earthquake geologist. A Florida man has been besieged with job offers after he was fired for saving a woman from an armed robber. Juan Canales, 42 years old, he lost his job as a waiter with a Thai restaurant in Fort Lauderdale after his boss got sick of the media attention. But he quickly received new job offers once the twist to the story was reported in the local press. He was fired after subduing a knife-wielding robber who tried to steal a Honda car from a woman customer. He disarmed the man, then with the help of three other men, managed to hold the robber down until police arrived. And that's the gratitude he gets. Well, in a moment, Jerry Corsi joins us. We find out about the Air Force being ordered to stand down on Friday. What's this all mean? Jerry Corsi's next on Coast to Coast AM. Jerry Corsi received a PhD from Harvard University in political science, noted author, Minutemen, Black Gold, Stranglehold, Atomic Iran, and a number of others, of course. Jerry, your latest did very well, did it not?
Yes, thank you, George. Great pleasure and honor to be back with you. Late Great USA has become a bestseller, and we're into a fourth printing on it. Thank you for asking, and it's done extremely well, been very controversial, and I've enjoyed defending it and even being called by President Bush a conspiracy theorist. I think that's a distinction in itself.
Absolutely. I know what that's all about. Jerry, this is an incredible story here that you once again broke on WorldNet Daily. Air Force ordering to stand down on Friday. First of all, tell us, what does this mean? What does a stand down mean?
Well, George, a stand down is basically the entire 100,000-person command, pilots, the whole air combat command is essentially going to be in a go to work, be in the office, nothing operational, work through procedures. Stand down means the entire unit's in a review kind of capacity. So there will be no air combat command airplanes in the air. There'll be no air combat command missions run. The entire command will be under review, and it occurred because of this really bizarre incident on August 30th when a B-52 at Minote Air Force Base in North Dakota, it was loaded with cruise missiles, six cruise missiles that had nuclear warheads, and the B-52 flew all the way to Barksdale Air Force Base in Louisiana. And evidently, the ground crew, the bomber crew in the B-52, no one knew the nuclear weapons were nuclear armed. These cruise missiles were actually live weapons. And when they got to Barksdale and realized that these were live weapons, no one could explain how they got on the airplane. And, this is completely outside the box. I mean, this is totally unexpected. An incident that demands investigation. Why? How do the cruise weapons get issued from the storage? How do they get placed on the airplane? Who gave the commands? And the story broke on a Air Force Times publication, which is very credible. It's a publication of the Air Force. I began investigating it. I talked with Air Force Command, and yes, the incident happened. And the commander of the entire unit just ordered a stand down in order to investigate why this happened, what the procedures were, and to do a report to indicate, this is a major breach of security, that you could have nuclear weapons taken out of the nuclear weapons arsenal, loaded on an airplane, a B-52, flown to Barksdale, which is a jumping off point for the Middle East, and nobody knew they were on the airplane, had been armed, and were in flight.
Well, I got to tell you, Jerry, I mean, I just got a strange feeling about this one, too. the fact that they have to stand down. They want to review their operations. You know, sure, maybe it's normal to do this after a bizarre case where six nukes just are missing for several hours. But, man, I don't know. It's weird.
Well, George, it's particularly weird when we've got all of the alerts, and we've got, you know, three aircraft carrier groups, Bama groups, in the Persian Gulf outside Iran. Barksdale Air Force Base is a jumping-off point into the Middle East. Some of the speculation is, were these weapons headed for Iran in a nuclear strike that had not been announced? Now, I'm sure the Air Force is going to try to address that question, but it certainly arises as to, you know, what was going on. Did the command come from the White House? Did it come from Vice President Cheney? Who exactly issued the command in the Air Force? And how could this happen? I mean, George, it's just remarkable to think about a B-52 crew in the air with six live cruise missiles, nuclear-armed, over the United States, heading to Barksdale, and nobody really knows about it. And, you know, it's a legitimate question. How did this happen?
Well, here's another problem, and I'm not saying anything that a terrorist hasn't already thought about, because this is a public story already. It's going all around the planet, and that is, if you're going to do something in this country and you need planes to fight back, whatever you're going to do in terms of terror, wouldn't you do it during a stand-down operation?
Well, that's the next question. That's a very valid question. I called up the spokesperson for NORAD and U.S. NORTHCOM. They're out in Peterson Air Force Base in Colorado Springs, and I've dealt with these spokespeople before. I know them quite well. I wrote a whole story on the new command center. I interviewed the commander out there, Tom Muir, did a two-part story in WorldNet Daily. And Michael Kucharek, who is the spokesperson, went to great lengths. I worked with him the entire day of Wednesday to prepare the story, back and forth on phone calls, emails. Now, he assured me that about 70% of the NORAD aircraft are Air National Guard or Air Force Reserved aircraft, and they would be fully on duty tomorrow and would be able to fulfill any missions that Air Combat Command would have flown had they been active. So there was a major effort to convince me that we were not going to be in a complete stand-down position as a nation, but that NORAD and the Air National Guard with the Air Force Reserves were going to fill that void. In fact, they revealed to me, I didn't know this before, the article broke this news, that NORAD and U.S. NORTHCOM were going to be in an alert status on September 24th and 25th when the UN convenes. There's going to be a major high-level meeting on climate change, and then on the 25th, Tuesday, the General Assembly begins its 62nd session. There'll be a lot of heads of state. And when U.S. NORTHCOM and NORAD go on alert status, this means we have live aircraft, fighter aircraft, F-15, F-16, on the tarmac, fully loaded, armed, and ready to take into the air at any instant. So this kind of an alert is done for major events, States of the Union address, et cetera. But it was remarkable that NORAD and U.S. NORTHCOM told me about this incident, and in effect to reassure me that they were functioning on duty, ready to go on alert as needed, and that the Air Combat Command stand-down system-wide, which has historically never happened before, it's going to happen all day tomorrow, that NORAD and U.S. NORTHCOM were able to handle the situation.
Wasn't there a NORAD exercise during 9/11?
Yes, there was. And George, there's been a lot of controversy because there's been a lot of speculation that we were in a stand-down position prior to 9/11. And in fact, if you look at the speculation on the Internet, one of the alternative theories was that this was a black flag mission and that these cruise missiles, nuclear armed, were being released so there could be attacks on cities that the government was launching in order to say we were in another 9/11, there would be an immediate use of the Patriot Act, the Declaration of Martial Law. Now, I can't validate that any of that's valid at all. That's pretty wild speculation at this point. But when you go to an entire system-wide stand-down of the Air Combat Command. We're going to have to watch tomorrow very carefully.
That's pretty extensive. Do you want to take phone calls, Jerry?
I'd be delighted to, George.
Okay, let's do that. We're going to open up the phone lines. Jerry Corsi is also available to talk with you about trucks rolling from Mexico into the United States, and also this driver's license story that he's uncovered of the North American Alliance. Think about all that. We'll be back in a moment with Jerry Corsi at Coast to Coast AM. Okay, next hour we're going ghost hunting, but when we come right back, we're going to take your phone calls with our special guest this hour, Dr. Jerome Corsi. That's next on Coast to Coast AM. Jerry, tell us a little bit about the story you also broke on WorldNet Daily about a week or so ago about this North American Alliance driver's license.
It's a remarkable story, George. I found that I was getting calls that the North Carolina driver's license has on the back of it a hologram of the continent of North America. It's a North Carolina driver's license. And it was William Gein of the Ali Packet, the Americans for Legal Immigration, sent me a photograph of it on the Internet. I looked at it and I said, that's incredible, because it looks just like the logo for the Security and Prosperity Partnership of North America, which we're in now. It was declared in Waco, Texas by George Bush. It's not a law or a treaty. It's a new relationship with Mexico and Canada, the SPP. And at the back of the North Carolina driver's license, this is the continent of North America with the lines of latitude so you can see the globe. And I called up the North Carolina Division of Motor Vehicles. It took me about a week to get the spokesperson, Marge Howell, and she confirmed, yes, it's there. That is on the back of the North Carolina driver's license. And she said this map of North America is a security element that eventually will be in the back of every driver's license in North America. I said, well, Ms. Howell, don't you mean North Carolina? She said, no, all of North America, this hologram is going to be on the driver's license.
The same hologram.
And she said, well, it's created by the American Association of Motor Vehicle Administrators, and that's a nonprofit organization. It's been around since 1933. It combines all the states in the United States and the provinces in Canada, and the country of Mexico belongs, although the Mexican states have not yet joined. And I called up the American Association of Motor Vehicle Administrators, and their spokesperson, Jason King, he told me, yes, we've created that hologram, the continent of North America. It's an optical variable device, which we are licensing to the states in the United States, to Canada. We hope it's going to be used in Mexico, he said, to identify that the driver's license has been issued in North America. It's a North American standard, not a U.S. standard, and it identifies a North American driver's license. So this is the first North American Union standard on a driver's license for the continent. And as it resembles the SPP logo almost identically, it's hard to say that we're not here moving towards a continental license plate standard. The first state to do this is North Carolina. It's remarkable. Anybody listening in North Carolina, just take out, if you've got a newly issued driver's license, take it out of your wallet. Look on the back in the right-hand corner, you know, below the barcode, you're going to see a hologram. If you look at it closely, it's going to be embedded into the driver's license, and it will be a hologram of the continent of North America on the globe, the lines of latitude. In the corners, it'll say NC for North Carolina. The number will identify North Carolina, and if scanned by any scanner in North America, it will identify the person, you know, by name and database, who holds that particular license.
All right, let's go to the phones. Wildcard line, you're on the air with Jerry Corsi. Hi there.
Oh.
Yes, go ahead, please.
Yes, this is Steve from Bismarck.
Hey, Steve.
In the Air Force for 9 years, security police, and I worked pretty much the whole time around nuclear weapons, including the ones that were just in the news. And there is no way in the world that was accidentally done. They have to sign off bunches of people to get that missile move from point A to point B for 5 minutes. I mean, you don't move them without thousands.
You would think, Steve. Yeah. Absolutely. But right. so if they did it on purpose, for a moment, let's think this way. Steve, yeah. If they did it on purpose, why did they let us all think it was a mistake?
Probably covering their tracks. Somebody found out about it. It's supposed to be top secret. And somebody blabbed, which people do. They brag, you know. And it got out. And now they got to cover their trail.
Were they trying, you think, to steal these six nukes?
Know. Not steal them. They were trying to move them over there. So they were ready, you know. It's one of those things where who do you trust least, the president or vice president? You know, I mean, they kind of both make me kind of shaky and scared.
What do you think? What do you think of these comments, Jerry?
Well,
thanks, Steve.
I think the caller is exactly right on, George. I mean, it's also, I checked the history. I cannot find another time when the Air Combat Command historically has called a system-wide stand down. This is exceptional. And when I talked to NORAD and U.S. NORTHCOM, it was clear they were going out of their way to reassure me that we're going to have air combat resources available tomorrow while the stand down goes on. I mean, at a minimum, whether it's going to be a cover-up or a full investigation, somebody did have to sign for these weapons to be released and put on a B-52, and those commands had to come from somewhere very high up. At a minimum, there's going to be top brass that are going to be retired early on this incident, let's just say. And I'm going to be calling up Air Combat Command tomorrow and all through next week until I get some straight answers.
Good for you,
Joe. I'll report what their story is, and we'll examine it from there.
Absolutely. First-time caller line, you're on Coast to Coast. Hi there.
Yeah. My name's Brian. I got a question about the truck drivers.
Okay, Brian.
How is that helping the United States? I mean, it gives me chills to see on the news that everybody, you know, I mean, this country is built on by immigrants. You know, it's the United States of America. All these immigrants built this country, United States of America.
Legal immigrants. Legal immigrants. You're right.
Legal. Exactly. Legal immigrants. How is that helping us when we got factories that are moving overseas, taking jobs away from the people here, putting illegal aliens to work, like in Beardstown, Illinois, where they got a population of Hispanics there now that are working at this factory, at Cargill, I believe it is, and half that town is unemployed.
Well, you know, as long as they're legal, I say bring them on. But if they're not, then we got a problem. Jerry, the truck situation, isn't there reciprocity where we're bringing our trucks into Mexico as well, unchecked? What's the percent?
There really are no U.S. truckers, hardly at all, that want to drive down in Mexico. I mean, that's a bit of a ruse. I mean, the State Department regularly puts out directives warning U.S. citizens that, you know, Mexico is a drug cartel-controlled, illegal country, you know, where corruption reigns. So if you go to Mexico and you're not in the luxury resorts, including truck drivers, you could get hijacked, kidnapped, held for ransom. There's no demand for U.S. truckers to go down into Mexico. This entire whole deal is because Mexican truck drivers are cheap and undercut U.S. drivers. I just broke a story today on WorldNet Daily, and George, it's shown up at the website since your show has begun. I interviewed James Hoffa, who is the general president of the Teamsters.
Of the International.
Of the International. And he says in the first paragraph of the story, the quote is, he is convinced that the Bush administration has a master plan to erase all of our borders and have a super government in North America. And so James Hoffa has come out. He will. We haven't announced this at all yet, but I was told by the Teamsters yesterday they're going to endorse my book, The Late Great USA. And so James Hoffa is going fully, he's weighing in on the record and saying that the Bush administration determination to jam Mexican trucks onto U.S. roads is another indication of the open borders policy, which is part of a plan to create a European Union-style North American Union here. And it's a remarkable, the Bush administration has just been pushing this program. There's not a single certified drug or alcohol testing laboratory in the entire country of Mexico, and the Federal Motor Carrier Safety Administration was allowing Mexican drivers to submit specimens to U.S. labs without being able to validate who the specimen was taken from. And any U.S. driver listening to us right now, George, is going to be, you know, appalled at this, because U.S. drivers are under very, very rigorous drug and alcohol standards and testing in certified labs in the United States. And if they miss those, if a U.S. truck driver even gets a DWI on their own time in their personal auto, they're going to lose their commercial job. But in Mexico, our Federal Motor Carrier Safety Administration was willing to allow the Mexican drivers to submit who knows whose specimen to a U.S. lab without being able to validate it. It was a complete double standard, and it shows that James Hoff is correct. The Bush administration, without real concern for safety, is pushing Mexican trucks onto U.S. roads. That was the plan.
Jerry, why don't you try to get James Hoff for the program? Go ahead.
I'd be delighted to, George. I'll call the Teamsters tomorrow. I'm sure he'd be honored and delighted to come on the show. I'll arrange that with you tomorrow.
I was one of the last reporters who chatted with his father in 1975 before he disappeared.
It's very interesting. It's a remarkable story because, you know, my father was with the Brotherhood of Railroad Trainmen. He was public relations director back into the 50s and the 60s. My dad helped create the United Transportation Union, and the Teamsters were, you know, regular visitors at a kitchen table. I mean, my dad helped put together piggybacking in the 50s, which, as you'll recall, I'm sure, was, you know, putting the truck trailers on flatbed rail cars before the interstate highway system was built, and taking them by rail across country. And the Teamsters have been close to me since I was a kid.
Well, you know, Jimmy Hoffa loved the Teamsters, but he was no Boy Scout, Jerry. As a matter of fact, I think one of the reasons why he disappeared was that he wanted to come back and somehow try to regain the Teamster presidency. And he wanted to go straight this time after all the things that he had done with the mob and, you know, the Teamster pension funds and things like that. And he did. He had a change of heart after he went to prison, and he came back and he wanted to change. And they decided, we're not going to change. And they bumped him off.
Well, I've been convinced always that Jimmy Hoffa knew too much, and Richard Nixon pardoned him, which was pretty exceptional in and of itself. And with the knowledge that Jimmy Hoffa had of the mobs and what had happened and the mobs moving into the Teamsters, I'm sure he was dangerous to very many people. But James P. Hoffa, who was championing the Teamsters to oppose this Mexican you know, demonstration project, 100 Mexican trucking companies with their long-haul rigs in the United States, I think this is tapping into a groundswell of U.S. public opinion. I mean, the House voted 411-3, Safe Roads Act of 2007, to block this Mexican truck experiment because it's unsafe.
So, but it happens. It stands up in the courts, and nobody stops it, Jerry.
Well, the Senate also voted, George. They voted late Tuesday night. They passed Senator Dorgan's amendment. He is from Democrats from North Dakota, to take all the funds out of the transportation funding bill for this Mexican trucking demonstration project. It's going to go into the bill. President Bush is saying he's going to veto the bill. If he does, there's going to be a showdown with Congress, because both in the House and Senate, there's overwhelming bipartisan support to say no Mexican trucks in the United States right now because we can't validate they're safe. And I think there's good proof we can't validate they're safe. Mexico has no criminal database on a national basis at all. Even in the Ramos and Campion case, the two Border Patrol agents in federal prison for 11 and 12 years because they shot at a fleeing Mexican drug smuggler. The drug smuggler, Aldretti Davila, testified at the trial. He admitted he brought 750 pounds of marijuana across the border, and the defense proved he had a commercial driver's license in Mexico that was valid the day he smuggled the drugs.
Jeez, wild card line. You're up with Jerry Corsi. Hi there.
Good evening, guys. I just wondered if Dr. Corsi had an opinion. Had the Air Force not stood down on 9/11, if the Pentagon defenses would have been in force and they would have stopped the plane before it hit the Pentagon. Also, they allegedly had like 100 cameras around the Pentagon.
That's true.
Why did they only release a few frames of a blur?
That has been a huge argument, Jerry, why we can't get the rest of those videos. All we see is a blur of something hitting the Pentagon, albeit the plane, a missile, who knows? It goes by so fast, you don't know.
And George, I agree that these are legitimate questions that have been raised. I've been saying the 9/11 Commission, just like the Warren Commission in the, you know, the Kennedy assassination, when we create these commissions that are political by their nature and they're just cover-ups, why don't we have a commission, a federally commissioned study on 9/11 that would put somebody like Alex Jones on it? Let's put the critics on the commission and let them ask their hard questions and demand the government come forward with evidence. Otherwise, you never get these questions answered. I've looked at the films of the, you know, the Pentagon and the cameras around it. I can't see the plane. I think these are legitimate questions. I'd like a new commission called at a federal level with the critics of 9/11, all the conspiracy theorists. Put them on the commission and let them ask their questions and let it be aired out in public.
Absolutely. And if it's proven that their basis is unfounded, so be it.
Right. The American people are adults. They can handle the truth. And let's give the opportunity with the critics, the people who are now dismissed as conspiracy theorists. You know, George Bush said we were, the late great USA that I've written, we're supposed to be conspiracy theorists because we're saying there's a European Union-style North American Union being created with our wide-open borders. My response to that was, you know, George, there's a very bad history of these presidential denials. Bill Clinton saying, you know, I did not have sex with that woman. Look what happened.
Yep.
Richard Nixon saying, I am not a crook in a press conference, and his administration saying that, you know, Watergate was a third-rate burglary. By the way, G. Gordon Liddy corrects me. He said it was a first-rate burglary. But at any rate, these presidential denials are not very credible. What is credible, the American people would love it. Let's create a new commission on 9/11. Let's put the most severe critics we can find on the commission. Let's televise it and demand that their questions be answered in front of the American people.
Let's go to West of the Rockies for a quick question. Go ahead, please.
Yes, good evening, George, and Jerry, great to speak with you tonight.
Thank you.
Thank you. I was wondering, with your knowledge of the international situation, if you've been hearing any chatter coming out of Mahmoud Ahmadinejad, to which the American media has either not been privy or has not been inclined to report of late.
The most chatter I've been hearing is coming out of the White House. You've got Vice President Cheney's office and Stephen Hadley in that office, again rattling the war drums, releasing these reports. It's like before we attacked Iraq. I worry about this because before we attacked Iraq, there was all those reports about, you know, weapons of mass destruction, which we never found. Well, now suddenly we're getting all these reports about, you know, Iran going over and supporting the insurgents in Iraq and the improvised explosive devices being made in Iran. I've known that information. I wrote about Iran's support of terrorists in atomic Iran, which I started writing in 2004. This is old information. But when the White House brings it out and parades it in front of the people today, I think it's a, you know, beating of the war drums. We're now saying we're going to build a military base on the border with Iraq and Iran. We still have three carrier groups out in the Persian Gulf running maneuvers.
That's the clock, Jerry. The time's got us, my friend. Thank you for being on the program, and I'll be back in a moment on Coast to Coast AM.